Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. It's the Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein. No, they're not related. They're just good friends. It's Tony and Gary.
Hello, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to yet another edition of the Tony Perkins Show featuring Gary Stein.
Still here.
I'm your master of ceremonies, Tony Perkins.
I'm Gary Stein. You know, whenever you say hello and you say hello, boys and girls, yes. Why do I feel like you're a ringmaster at the circus?
I know it does. You know what it reminds me of? I think I get it from, do you remember the show Wanda-rama growing up in New York?
Sure.
Was it a national show or was it just in New York?
It might have been a regional show that went national.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I remind myself of that when I do that. Hi there, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, with Sandy Fox, I think.
Sandy Becker. You either have to go with Sonny Fox. Or Sandy Becker.
That's who I was thinking of.
God, it's so hard to actually correct you on every show.
And later, Bob McAllister.
Yes.
Yes, I remember these.
See,
yeah.
And you think you're not as old-timey as I am,
I
but you are.
Those are all old-timey. We're already starting.
Nobody knows what we're talking about. They never do.
Anyway, welcome to the show. It is episode 23. Merry Christmas. I'm sure you're, depending on when you're listening to this, you're scurrying around trying to get those final Christmas gifts and get them under the tree. We thank you for spending some time with us.
I'm picturing them scurrying. Like little squirrels, you know, they're scurrying.
Little squirrels.
Hopefully you're taking it slow and not hurting yourself getting your gifts.
Please be safe. Also want to say hi to Rob Ford. Hello, Rob.
Yeah. Hey. How's it going?
Going great. How are you doing?
Going great. I'm doing great myself.
Excellent. Are you ready for the holidays?
Yeah, they're coming up fast. I think I'll get everything ready, though. It'll be good.
Do you travel home to see the parents?
No, I'll be in town this year.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, yeah.
I did it already.
I'm a little concerned about Rob. Are you going to be by yourself?
No, I have some friends that I can meet up with. It'll be fun. It'll be a little non-traditional, but I'll be into it for sure.
All right, because if you need a place, you know, we celebrate Christmas at my house.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
So I'll give you the call for Christmas.
Okay.
Not Gary.
Okay.
Well, if you want to, you can call me if you want to come to New Jersey and pay.
And pay?
Because I charge for the guest room. So you're certainly welcome to come up.
We don't charge, Rob, if you want to. Seriously, if you want to, it's a family get together, traditional Christmas.
He understands, Tony.
Yeah.
I think you've driven the point home.
Okay, all right.
You know, but hey, you know what? I don't think you want to do that.
Yeah.
We have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun. We play board games. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. He's already out.
Yeah. That was
yeah. Oh, my God.
Wow.
I can't wait for an evening of Boggle.
Boggle? We're not that up to date.
Okay.
It's going to be password and concentration.
Right. And if you're lucky, Monopoly if you stay up late.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, thank you for joining us, folks. Hey. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's the easiest thing to do. It's free. The show downloads automatically to your iPad or iPod or iPhone device.
Anything that starts with an I.
Anything, that's right. It downloads immediately as soon as a new show becomes available every Monday. And don't forget, once you've listened, please leave a 5-star review. It will make us happy and it's good for us and you'll feel better about yourself.
It's good for your soul and if you listen to this show, you'll live longer.
Wow.
That's How's quite, that for a promise?
You know what? You will, because you'll laugh, and laughing makes you live longer.
Although some people have probably laughed and choked to death. What?
Boy, take the steam right out of the room.
It's my job.
Wow.
Who's going to do that better?
So laugh and take your chances is what you're saying.
I think so. When you listen to this show, you're taking your chances.
It'll either be very good for you or very bad for you.
That's right.
One of the two. You let us know. Also want to thank those of you who watched us on Fox 5 Friday night on OTC Off the Cuff.
Mm-hmm.
We thank you for your responses. There is another one. Now, this is a brand new one. It's a 30-minute show that's
right.
going to be airing on Christmas Day on Fox 5 Off the Cuff. Fox 5 here in Washington. If you're not in town, it'll be streamed live on our website, which I think is my Fox DC.
Do we know what times it's on Christmas, Tony?
Christmas Day, 5 p.m. and 11 p.m.
Right.
Okay, half-hour show, Off the Cuff, myself, Gary Stein, Sarah Fraser from DC 107.3. It's a Christmas special, although we've already taped it. It's kind of the It's the anti-Christmas
special. Yes, yeah. It is.
It is not a feel-good, you know.
No, it's where we would naturally go.
Right, exactly. So I
it's really, it's a TV version of the podcast.
Right, that's absolutely right. So if on Christmas Day you've had enough of the eggnog and the warm feelings and everything, turn on our show. It's a little antidote to all of that.
And a little warning. If Christmas gets a little bit out of hand and you watch the show in its first showing and you watch it again in the evening, it is the same show. Just want you to know you're watching the same show.
Don't tell them that. They'll
But laugh again.
Right.
And you can write to Fox 5 and tell them how wonderful both shows were.
Right.
And for the listeners that aren't in the D.C. area, I'll put up a link for the live stream so anybody in the country will be able to watch it.
Fantastic. Right. Thank you, Rob. We appreciate it. Also reruns on New Year's Day. I don't know what time, but it reruns
And I
on
forget
New Year's
what
Day.
The price was. You offered to put up a certain amount of money for people to write good reviews, but how much was it?
That was not going to be discussed on the podcast.
We'll talk about
yeah,
that
that's
off
a
the...
separate...
See, I get this stuff confused.
You got to read the notes.
I never did radio.
Hey, we have a great show for you today as our special holiday gift to you. Our guest today is someone that I've known for many years. I love her. She is a wonderful woman. You see her every night on Fox News at 10, Fox 5 News at 10. The wonderful Sue Palka is with us today and is going to be joining us here in the studio.
I have met the wonderful Sue Palka.
She's fantastic. She's one of the, I'll say this now, but I'll say it later as well. At the station, we all talk about who's the nicest person at the station, and invariably we all agree it's Sue Palka. What you see on TV is what you get in person.
But you told me that at Fox 5 I was considered to be the nicest visitor.
No. I said you were the most frequent visitor.
That's
a very different thing.
Well, you could take that the wrong way. So
Sue is here. She's celebrating a milestone, which we'll tell you about in just a couple of moments. But first, dear Rob.
Hey, yes. Rob.
Yes. All right. So a couple of weeks ago, we had the people from the Washington Post Magazine Date Lab on the show.
Christine Antonitis.
Yes. Wonderful. She was great. And they've been great.
They've
been retweeting stuff and everything, which we thank them for.
Even though we said that her name sounded like you needed an antibiotic.
You said that.
All right, I said it. If you have Antonitis, you got to get right to the doctor.
It does sound like a disease. It really does.
I thought so.
Anyway, we said we're gonna get you on Date Lab, and you graciously volunteered to do this so that you will be hooked up with, not hooked up.
Hey, Raw, you can't, you know what? You can't even say that anymore.
That means
we're not looking
different.
For him to get hooked up.
No. I mean,
it's just a date.
If it goes well, whatever happens.
Hooking up could be later.
Yeah. Right. We're going to match you up with somebody.
Yes.
And go on a date. So, are you dragging your feet or have you filled out the application?
I have filled out the application and it has been submitted.
Oh, wow.
And from what I hear, they are hard at work trying to find me a match. I'm really excited to hear what they come up with.
Well, when you say they're hard at work, I don't really think it's going to be that hard for them to find somebody. You make it sound like they're hard at work scouring the universe looking for someone to date me.
Have they implied that they have no matches in the database, so they're having to go outside of the...
Well, they're playing their cards pretty close to the vest, so hopefully, you know, we'll see.
Now, let me ask about the application. Is it like 25 questions,
it's
100?
It's a questionnaire. I'm not sure how many the questions there are, but it actually took some time, and I put in a fair amount of thought to fill it out.
If it helps in any way, just know that Tony and I would write a letter of recommendation.
Oh, well, thank you.
Not that we've dated you.
Yes.
But we do think you're fun. You're very smart. You're very good at what you do, and I think that whoever they choose for you is in for a great time.
Yeah. I don't know that they need references, but, you know, we could see.
Well, we may not be the best references.
give me a sense of, I'm sure they don't want information out there too much. What's it called if it's private, not private information?
I'm not going to help you.
No, what's the
I'm
word?
I'm not helping.
Classified?
No, not classified. Privileged. That's what I want. Privileged information. But tell me, give me a sense of what the questions are. They ask about, you know, do you like sports? Do you drink? What is it?
There is a lot of that kind of thing. They say, you know, what's your ideal Friday night? Do you like to party? Do you like to chill out? Do you drink? Where do you live? Where do you like to hang out? Just those kind of generalities. And they do actually get into some very cool questions. One I really liked was, how are you DC? Because they cover the DC beat. So they say, how are you DC? And then how are you not DC?
I got you.
Well, I hope that doesn't prejudice anybody, that if you're not D.C., you know, you're not an eligible guy for
But it will help. You know, it helps if you see yourself as an outsider, really.
Right.
You may appeal to someone else who sees themselves as an outsider.
That's true. That's true.
Right. Yep.
This is too late because you already filled out the application, but I'm hoping you didn't refer to water sports. Just a thought. Just a thought. And also, I hope you didn't bring up any of the prison time.
Well,
because that's going to be that'll toss you right out. Well, I think
it'll certainly change the demo that they yeah, are looking to match you up with. Yeah. Do they ask, have you ever been in jail or anything like that?
They ask you, have you been convicted of assault? And I guess that's just for safety, domestic assault, that kind of thing. You know, the date safety kind
good
of
good for them.
Well, that's
things.
Great. Yeah. And in your case, you've never been convicted.
Right.
So that's good.
It was a mistrial after you threatened one of the jurors, right?
That's right, yeah.
Right. That was thrown out. It was
No, Rob's a good boy. Rob's a good boy.
He is. He's right. Like our son.
Yes, he is. I don't know what that says about us.
Well, it says that we're no spring chickens, I'll tell you that.
That's not all it says, Mr. Stein.
Well, I didn't say a child of ours together.
That's what you imply.
Really? Never mind.
All right. Shall we get Miss Palka in here?
Thank God our wives are probably listening. Yeah. Please get Miss Palka in here, please.
You know her, you love her. From Fox 5, News at 10, and the News at 5. She makes guest appearances on that show as well. She has been reporting the weather on Channel 5 since the 1980s.
Same weather?
She's not the same weather.
Oh, okay.
She is a, she won't like me for saying this, she is a Washington broadcasting legend. Ladies and gentlemen, Sue Palka.
All right.
Oh, stop. Yay! It's too much. Oh, you guys are hilarious.
Oh, thank you.
I cannot wait to read about Rob on Date Lab, which I'm obsessed with. It's the first thing I read every Sunday.
Me too. That's why this whole thing started.
Yeah, Tony brought it up in the first place, and then we volunteered Rob.
Now, let me ask you if it's the same with you, with me. I read it. It's the first thing I read. And I'm always so frustrated because they have a nice date. And then
they never get in touch again. No. I know. Even this week, I'm so disappointed to see that it just never, ever works out. Why are people so busy that they can't make this connection?
Thank you.
I blame the internet.
Thank you.
Yes.
I agree. And yeah. I think I think their expectations are too high.
Absolutely.
You just had a nice time. Why not follow that up?
I think people just would rather be catfished. I mean, they just want to be out there, which is another podcast altogether.
Oh, well, you can do it here.
Yeah. Well, it didn't work out for me. No.
Okay.
Well, since you mentioned that, I do want to mention that Sue's lovely husband is in the studio supporting his wonderful wife, Joe. Joe Palka is here.
Joe,
who many of you know?
He's my driving Miss Susie. Yeah. He likes to make sure I get places on time. He's my arm candy, or as I refer to him, my first husband.
We're gonna do a whole show with Joe sometime.
Yes. Oh, he'd love that.
Joe is fascinating and interesting in his own right.
Yes,
the
is.
First time Tony can't be here, we're gonna have Joe on.
Very nice.
Well, you know,
hijacked.
I do want to say that before the show, Joe came in, Joe, first of all, looks fantastic. As always, he's well-dressed. Vintage clothing.
Yes.
Always vintage clothing. Yeah. Which you like as
I
well.
Love it.
Yeah. Well, you like it because it's cheap.
That's why Joe likes it, too.
That's also why I like Tony.
Oh, wow. But you guys bonded immediately.
Immediately. Yeah. You know how that happens sometimes?
Yeah.
These guys walked into the room, and I said hi to Sue, but, you know, kind of passed her right by. And then I liked Joe's camel hair coat. He looked like a mafia boss. And I wanted to know if he could leave the coat for me, jokingly. And he started telling me about other things that he has, and he's going to like...
And you guys hit it off.
Yeah, I'm getting a sport jacket out of this, and, you know...
I'm getting
an overcoat.
Can Joe lean in, Sue, for a moment?
Absolutely.
Joe lean into the mic just for a quick moment? He's getting a sport jacket out of this?
Well,
how did he do this?
I have a couple of them, because I always get them off of eBay.
Uh-huh.
And Sue will tell you, sometimes I buy them when I just don't need them. So I've got this closet filled with vintage clothing, and they're just slightly different shades of camel. What, honey? I needed a light brown to offset my light brown.
So you have an extra?
Yes, I do. I don't know if they're the same size, but I also got a really neat overcoat that's just a little bit too small for me in the shoulders and a little bit too long in the arms. And that I'm saying, Gary, could be the coat for you.
And I met you 10 minutes ago, and Tony has never given me clothes.
It's kind of spreading the good word. You know what I mean? We're talking vintage clothing.
But I think we're talking kismet.
Kismet?
I think that we have
leave
met.
Your religion out. out of this, sir.
Also, I don't want people to think that that goes back to dating. But I think that when the show is over, you and I are going to go hang out.
We'll hang out. We'll do that.
Both of you. Have a good time. Yes. Enjoy yourselves.
Okay. I'll back off here. I'll go into the waiting room. Sit here in the waiting room. Wait here in the sitting room.
Joe's going to be on eBay looking up.
He is one chromosome removed from being a clothes hoarder. I'm not kidding. I kid you guys not. He has so many overcoats that when people come to our house, he says, "What size are you?" And then he goes to the closet and he gets an overcoat. He goes, "I want you to have this."
Oh my goodness.
And they get coats when they come to our house, some of which he only pays $5 for. And they're so cool. They look like something John Cusack would wear.
My last interjection, because I'm not an invited guest here. But I feel overcoats are kind of like manure. It's no good unless you spread them around.
Yes. The people who've received them are really going to appreciate that.
Yes. Anybody wearing vintage, it's like we're all part of a brotherhood. And I'm not selfish that way. I give and I give and I give.
I'm going back
to the waiting room.
You just painted a picture of an overcoat that might smell a little that I'm not sure I want.
Well, Joe buys me vintage bathrobes, and I'm not into vintage. And I keep telling him, thank you for the bathrobe, full length. Looks like something, Joan Crawford would wear while bending wire hangers. And then he asked me to stand at the top of the steps a lot. And I'm like, what's going on here?
This is some role play stuff that's going on.
This would happen today.
I have no idea where the money is. His second wife is probably waiting in the garage. And he's waiting for me to tumble down the steps in a vintage robe and say, oh my gosh, it must have been too long.
Sue, what you've learned about him is that he's not willing to pay full price for you.
Exactly right. And he wants other people's DNA on my body.
That's right.
So they'll I'll see myself on HLN some night, Forensic Files. I thought she'd live longer than that.
Right.
I'm so sorry we've gotten off track.
We've gotten on track.
No, that's what it is.
That's what this show is.
Well, Sue, I have to mention this, and this is what made me... first of all, let me say this. When we started the show, I knew I wanted you on at some point, but recently Sue was honored, along with some other local broadcasting legends. She was inducted into the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences Silver Circle for 25 years. It's been more than that, but 25 years broadcasting here in the Washington area and having such a significant impact on the broadcast community and on the community at large. And that deserves a big round of applause. Congratulations.
You know what? You deserve that, too. I mean, how many years do you have?
40.
She was talking to me. I don't, but seeing when I see you up there and I see some of the other recipients, Johnny Holiday,
he's great.
Don Richards, I mean, some of the folks who aren't on the
air. Rhea Fiken from Maryland Public Television.
Yep. I just think, you know what, okay, I've been around a long time, but I have not had the impact that these people and yourself have had.
Oh my gosh, well, that's the same reaction I had when we were inducted. People went before me and I leaned over to my husband. I said, I got to get out of here. I mean, I should not, I'm not in their league. You feel very unworthy.
Yeah.
And some of the stories, especially with Don Richards, who was a presidential announcer at the White House for CBS Radio live for Eisenhower. And he's a beautiful man with a gorgeous voice. And you think, this is incredible.
Yeah.
He really is still broadcasting, too. He does old-time radio shows now in the Shenandoah Valley with actors.
He's amazing. And Gary, you'll love this. He walks in. He's got to be 90 years old, I'm guessing, something like that. He has a walker, but he's fit. He's wonderful. Gets up to the mic, and the voice is as crystal clear and deep as it ever was. He sounds fantastic.
He's still funny.
Yeah.
It was really quite wonderful to see that. I did note the walker and how hard it was for him to get up on stage. Mm-hmm. But when he got up there and he got in front of that mic, he was in command.
Well, that was the great thing about that. A couple of great things. It was inspiring. All the nighttime crew came to support Sue and everything. And it was an inspiring night hearing all the stories. And it made me feel better about what we do.
Right.
Broadcasting. Sometimes the day-to-day you feel beat up
bit. It's easy to go there. I mean, for all media, everybody's, the pie has shrunk. People are watching, doing other things, listening to podcasts. We get it. We understand that, but it's also affected the budget for a local news station, and it's easy to get down on that.
Right.
And there can be some technical errors here and there as we move into a stage of automation in our business. But that night did refresh me. It restored me. Mm-hmm. It made me feel like I am part of something good here. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I was able to ride the wave. Mm-hmm. And we're still moving.
Right. That's right.
The wave's not quite as high as it was, but I still believe in it. And that was very, very wonderful.
Let me say this. What year did you start at Channel 5?
I started in September of 1985.
1985. Okay. All right.
And I know exactly when I came in. It was during Hurricane Gloria coming up the coast.
Oh, really?
So,
oh,
yeah. Fox has a different date for when I started, which is probably when the paperwork arrived at HR. Because I'd already been hired and they're like, whoopsies. They always have it as the end of September. But I know because I was broadcasting and I was supposed to get all this training. And Tony, you and I can talk about that too. Mm-hmm. They'll say, oh, no, you will not get on the air until you're 100% comfortable. Hey, you're on the air today. I'm like, I'm not comfortable. Yeah. I'm not comfortable.
They throw you on.
And I remember I had to be on at 10 o'clock with Maury Povich, and I was so intimidated. Mm. And they said, you're going to talk about storm surge with this hurricane and what it's going to do. And of course, the first thing out of my mouth is, storm surge. I just stumbled in the nation's capital. I'm so fired. I was so, you know, and I could see the news director and her assistant kind of cringe a little bit in the office that was ahead of me, and it was glass. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going down.
It seems to me that most big things that we wind up doing are trial by fire.
Yes.
You don't really get the training. You do have to just get in the field, mm-hmm. improvise and do it. When I was his producer at Good Morning America, I was the weather producer. I'd never done anything like that before. And he was reluctant to have me go on the road because I didn't really know how to produce a remote like that. Mm-hmm. But it was trial by fire. Like, you do it, and that's how you learn.
And this is what happened when they hired you, Tony. I remember they came down and they said, you know we need somebody, and we've got somebody. Now, listen, he's a comedian on radio.
You must have loved that, right?
Oh, for the love of God, please. You are kidding me. So this guy knows nothing about weather, and you're going to, and he's a comedian. Wow. And so then they bring Tony in, and Tony, you, Hillary, and I got together, and we're like, he was so wonderful, and he was so serious about weather. But I do recall that they told you that all your maps would be made for you, and everything would be produced, and that was not true.
Not the case. No.
And not the first time, right?
It's the same thing with you. Oh, you're going to get all the training and all that. They sent me somewhere for like a week. There was this woman who would train, you know, ramp up people who were, because back in those days, they were hiring sometimes people to do the weather who were not meteorologists. That was very common back then, because they wanted a personality or this or that, what have you. So there was a woman who would train people. All right, here are the basics of weather. I remember she taught me about fronts and what low pressure was and what high pressure was and a couple other basics. And then I came back and was you and Hillary Howard, who's now on WTOP Radio. You guys taught me everything. And I did take it very seriously.
You did. That's the best part, is you really wanted to learn it, and you would not settle for being a bozo in the weather department.
Right, right. I didn't, because to
When did you settle to be being a bozo? I just thought I'd throw something in.
Years later, when I realized I didn't understand the weather, I figured I'll just be the bozo.
I have to ask you something else, too, that sort of slipped by. You really didn't know anything about fronts until you learned something about weather?
But I, you know, because for me, my thing to this day, with every job I have, it's all about preparation. You got to be ready.
Right.
You got to
be
ready. You got to know your stuff. And then the rest of it will come. The personality part of it, that part, at least I know I can do because I had been doing stand-up and all that kind of thing. But I had to learn the weather. I remember one of my most embarrassing moments. I'd probably been doing it for 2 months, something like that. Lark McCarthy. One morning, it was in the wintertime. We were having some freezing rain, changing over to sleet, I think. And she said, Tony, on the air. Tony, what's the difference between freezing rain and sleet?
Oh, boy.
And I didn't really know. I wasn't sure. And I don't know what I said to get through it, but I remember after that thinking, oh, my God, I have to learn everything. I still don't know everything I need to know.
You probably suddenly turned into Professor Irwin Corey.
Well, probably. And I was embarrassed. And, you know, I don't think she did it to embarrass me.
No.
But, in fact, Lark's a dear friend of mine now. But, you know, it was kind of tough going at the beginning there. But I thank you, and I told you this the other night, you and Hillary were so wonderful. I can imagine how you felt when they told you, it's a comedian from radio.
Well, but we were so relieved when we met you because we could tell you were going to take it seriously. Yeah, and that was what we were hoping.
Yeah,
because it wasn't, you know, when they first said, oh, we've hired a comedian, it was like, you know, and if you're real good, he'll make you feel good. Like, oh, man, where are we going with this? We thought it was going to like drag the whole weather department down, but it didn't. It was really a gift.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for teaching me everything and taking me under your wing.
And you don't miss it, do you?
I don't, you know, because I did it for such a long time, and I wanted to. Why is this turning into an interview of me? How is this happening? I like doing a wide variety of things, and I'd done that. So
right.
I kind of pushed to move to the desk, and you know, they've been very gracious about all that and everything. So, you know, I like what I'm doing. I don't miss it. Because, you know.
That's good, because we don't have an opening.
Right. And because I see the sweat, you know. People think that weather people don't care, and they're just saying whatever they feel like saying. You take it seriously. This is your life. And I see the sweat when, you know, you've predicted 3 to 6 inches of snow, and then it looks like it might not materialize. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you know where we get into a jam is when the producers realize there is a threat coming, and it might be in, like, the 7-day window, because there's, you know, even something we've been kind of watching now, and I try to go into radio silence so they don't figure it out, because then they want you to start addressing it, and a perception gets out there that may not be what happens, and you get in the 24-hour window, which is almost always 100% accurate now. And you can't bring back the perception.
Right.
And they're like, you guys said it would be bigger than this. And we may not have ever said that, but the perception is really hard to dial back. So that's the hard thing with weather casting.
And because weather drives local news. I mean, that's what drives the ratings a lot. The producers and the promotions department, they want to, as soon as there's an inkling of particularly snow in this area, oh, can we talk about the storm coming and all that kind of stuff? And it almost pushes you into a corner that you don't want to be in.
Yeah, it's really tough. And then there's the social media aspect, too. So I do feel like we're even busier than we've ever been because people are asking us questions on Twitter and Facebook. And, of course, at work, they want us to do daily videos and be on Instagram and answer everybody's questions and people directly ask about that, and we do try to answer that, but you don't want to give anybody numbers and try to give those inches out ahead of time because it might be wildly inaccurate 7 days out.
But people like to blame the weather people.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you know, 'cause
goes with the territory.
I worked with him for 7 years at GMA, and people make jokes. The joke was always, it's the only job you can have in America where you can be wrong 50% of the time and still get a raise.
I hate that joke.
I hate that joke, too.
It's a bad joke because it's inaccurate,
right?
And it's a bad joke because people want you to give them a prediction earlier than you're ready to. Nobody should actually even be giving. Don't you think we shouldn't be giving 7-day forecasts?
I don't mind the 7-day forecast if you take it for what it is, which is an outlook.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But are you're not really able to give the disclaimer. You actually have to do the 7-day outlook on air, and people just read it and go.
Every additional 24 hours, you have a lower likelihood of being accurate. You can be pretty accurate with a 7-day in general terms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's the thing, the two things. Number one, about that joke, I always thought, you know what, you don't get it. Because frankly, if I was only right 50% of the time, I would be fired. You know, that would not be acceptable.
Right.
That's what your job is, predicting the weather. The other thing I always found when it came to snow, you could go on, you could say, here in the district, we're going to get 3 to 6 inches. It'll be 1 to 3 to the east, to the west. It'll be 6 to 10 inches, maybe 12 in the higher elevations. All anybody hears is the 12.
Yeah,
that's exactly
right. That's right.
Right.
But you know what? You must be getting better at all the stuff that you're doing, because now I've noticed that as a news anchor, you're always right.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad you know that.
You've upped your game, I think.
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
Well, when I get that same joke about, hey, it must be nice to be paid to be wrong all the time, I always say, well, you know, you forget that this is a prediction of the future. And if you can correctly predict the score of the Redskins game in advance
and get it
right down, and I know you can, Tony, I'm leading you into something, then you do what I do.
That's right. Absolutely right. Now, but the game has changed so much over the years. When you were telling us when you first started doing the weather, it wasn't at Channel 5. Where was it?
I started in Richmond, Virginia.
Richmond. Right. Tell us about the technology that you had.
Oh, my gosh. Tony, it was hilarious. And Gary, maybe you do remember this. Actually, for Halloween this year, I pretended to be a 1970s TV weatherman because that's what I remember.
Right.
You know, it was all guys.
Yep.
Yeah,
and,
it was.
Very few women. I was probably the first woman hired at the station in Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I just wanted to tell you that I had gotten the idea idea to do weather from an audition I had in Erie, Pennsylvania, because I didn't have a weather background either. I was a teacher and an actress, and I was doing a few commercials in my hometown of Erie, and I got a cold call.
It's the commercial capital of the world, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. For Loblaws grocery store, anyway. You'll love Loblaws, too. Loblaws.
You never forget that, do you?
You never forget it. And, you know, I kind of, that was my little thing in Erie, Pennsylvania. Joe helped me get involved with some of that, the theater and everything. But I got cold called by a news director, and he said, "We are auditioning actresses to do the weekend weather."
Oh my goodness.
And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" I said, "I'm not interested." That's what I told him. Yeah. He goes, "Oh no, please come in. You know, it's not as hard as you think." I said, "I don't know anything about the weather." And he goes, "You don't have to."
Boy, has it changed.
It's so changed. And so I go in. No one knows I'm coming. Typical TV. Mm. Like, way, we're so good in the communications business. No one tells anyone anything. That hasn't changed. But I it was actually in a house, the TV station. I rang the doorbell, and the anchor answers the door. And I'm so shocked. And I said, "Is Vance McBride here?" He was the weatherman, and he was a big, you know, big deal in Erie. It was like, it was like meeting the Bob Ryan of Erie, Pennsylvania, and I was in shock to meet him, like a legend. And he's very officious with me. He goes, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I'm supposed to watch you prepare the weather." He goes, "Nobody told me about this." He said, "Do you know your 50 states?" I said, "I do know my 50 states. I teach fourth grade, for heaven's sakes. I know my capitals." He goes, "All right, well, go sit in the studio." He didn't show me a thing. And time for the anchors to come on. It's all men, of course. And I'm telling you, I could have written Anchorman, because that's how they were. They were wearing the matching jackets, and they come out, you know, they'd have no idea who I am, and they're certainly not going to give me the time of day. They're running their own prompter, though, which I think is, wow, back to the future.
We've gone back to that somehow.
With paper. And they finished the whole thing, and I figure I better tell them something. So I said, "Guys, I've been watching you my whole life, and I just have to say this. You are so good." And the one guy looks at me, and he goes, "We know."
Oh, whoa, no.
That is a true story.
Oh, no.
Wow. And I'm like, wow. So then I leave, you know, Vance sends me on my merry way, and the news director calls. He goes, "So do you want to try this?" I said, "Yes, I do."
Really?
And I thought, it's easier than correcting spelling papers until midnight, for starters, and I'm making under 10 grand teaching Catholic school in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
So this has got to be easier. So I went in and did an audition, and I was really, like, I talked way too fast, crazy, and the woman who is still anchoring in Erie said, "I think you can do this." And she was so positive. I was shocked, because I said, "Really?" Because I think I need to be cast out on my ear in the street. This is terrible. Mm-hmm. But she said, "No, you're even better than I was when I first started."
Oh, that's great.
Huh. And she's still there.
Because it would have been amazing. I mean, we know where you are now, but it wouldn't have been surprising if, when the guy said, "Do you want to give this a shot?" if you had said, "No, thank you," just based on what you'd observed with these jerks, you know, the man
show. I think it
kind
of fired me up a little bit, you know? And so, but the bottom line is, I didn't get the job, because we moved.
Oh.
So we moved to Omaha, Nebraska for Joe's job. He got a good radio job, and we went out there, but I had the bug. I said, "I'm going to continue to teach, and I'm going to continue to do theater." And I started doing some national commercials, and I put together a pretty good reel. And but I said, "Oh my gosh, Tornado Alley, I'm not going to forecast out here."
Right.
And I was starting to see everybody with this AMS seal next to their name. Yeah. So we were now entering into a new era of television weather, which was much more scientific, and the presentation really started to change.
Right.
So we get to Richmond, and I'm not seeing the AMS seal. We moved again with Joe's job. And there was a TV station near my house, so I could find it.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe said, "You need to go apply at that TV station." I said, "Oh, they're just going to say, how many words can you type?" But I did think, yeah, I should do this. Mm-hmm. And I had my commercials, my reel, and I dropped it off. And she actually literally said, "Now, how many words per minute can you type?" Did somebody up there? I said, "Oh, about 60. I said, "I'm actually auditioning if you have a weather opening." Uh-huh. And I just left the tape, never expected to hear. And a guy called me in about a week. They had an opening.
Wow.
And he says, "Hey, where's your weather audition?" I said, "Oh, you know, I don't have one, but I'll come into the station and do it for you." So I put my I set my VCR the night before. Like the good actress I am, I memorized everything the weather guy did.
Wow.
And I went in and really did a pretty good audition, although I talked so fast that they couldn't believe I was even speaking English. But they did the magic marker on the board.
So that's how they did the weather?
They did the weather with the magic. It was all drawn, and he just, you know, wrote down the temperatures from here and there. And so I came in and did it, and they said, hey, you did a good job. And
they liked the way you drew.
They liked the way I drew. I
could draw a really handle a magic marker.
Those barbs look good on that cold front. So they hired me, and before I knew it, I am about to make my debut in Richmond, Virginia, and I was almost physically ill. I was so scared.
Sure, yeah.
I went into the restroom, and I said, oh, my God, what am I doing? Please get me through this. I will never do this again if I get through this without fainting. And I went in. I memorized the whole thing like it was a play.
Mm.
And I never even bothered to listen to the poor anchor woman whose name is Sandy Fowler, who just the other day contacted me on Facebook, which I couldn't believe. She said, Sue, I'm still out here. And Sandy said, I assumed she would say, welcome to Richmond, Sue. But instead she said, is this Indian summer or what? I said, thank you, Sandy. It's so good to be here. And off to the races. And I looked over, had her head on the desk. And I am just like, and somebody called and said, was that a FedEx commercial? Because they had that guy that used to talk super fast.
Yeah.
What language was she speaking? And they just called and slammed me. I talked so fast.
Oh, my goodness.
Joe used to pick me up after my weekend broadcast, and I'd usually come out crying.
Oh,
I was terrible. I talked so fast. And there was a guy there who was trying to skunk me a little bit. You know, he wanted the job. He thought I stunk. And, and this kind of happened to a lot of people in the early business. I called it hazing.
Yeah.
You know, they just, they try to take you down. It was a sport.
Nothing bad happens now in this business.
And so, no, not at all. No. And so I had been writing up my weathercast on the teleprompter and reading it on the teleprompter. And he knew that this guy was running the camera and he wanted to do what I did. So he took that camera and backed it all the way down the studio and zoomed in so I couldn't see the script.
Oh, no.
And you know what he did? He set me free. Because I realized I know this, and I brought my personality into it because I couldn't see it, but I did know the weather, and I had been relying on that as a net. And I went from like being at the F level to I took it up to, for my game, an A game, and they're like, oh, you were fantastic.
Isn't that something?
It was really neat because he tried to hose me, and he knew it, and I knew it, and I looked at him, I said, thank you. Because you set me free.
Wow.
And I never again relied on a script to do the weather.
That's
and I brought
fantastic.
My personality into
that
it.
That is fantastic.
So then Joe gets a job in Washington. And they heard about it at the station. They said, hey, what's this? You're going to Washington? I said, yes. Joe's got a job. And they said, we want to make you the main weather person here. Don't leave. You have got this. Now, we want you to stay. I said, I don't really want to. Yeah. I'm not even sure I want to do this. Oh, and I'm going to have a baby. So
okay, so there you go.
So we go to Washington.
Did Joe know?
Joe did not know. The Schwann's man was really happy. No, I'm just kidding. Joe had already started, and we go up to Washington, and I'm watching now the legends, you know, the Bob Ryan, who I thought was so fantastic, and Gordon Barnes and all these other people. And Joe says, hey, I'm working at WMAL. Bob Ryan says he'll look at your tape if you want.
Wow.
So because he was doing the weather for MAL.
Right.
I sent him my tape. He said, call me in 2 weeks. And I called him and he says, you can do this. And he said, Channel 5 has a weekend opening.
This is fantastic.
And I really have always loved Bob for that because he could have said, no, you don't. And I said, Bob, I don't have a degree in meteorology. He said, well, he said, if you're going to do this, make sure you go and learn it. If not, maybe you use this to jump off and be an anchor.
You know
and
what?
I appreciated that.
And this is one of the things I love about this business, and I love you telling this story. Bob Ryan, Gary, was the longtime Channel 4, I mean, the dean of Washington weather here. And you know, ultimately, as it played out, one of Sue's competitors. But for people to know that it's not all about all the time competition, that people know each other and look out for each other and help each other, that's huge. And it's great to hear that.
I like all my weather colleagues in this town. Doug Hill is a great friend. We text each other, Topper, everybody is wonderful. Doug Kammerer, I think, is fantastic on Channel 4.
I saw Doug the other night. We spent a little time
together.
He's great. Yeah,
everybody is great. And I remembered what Bob did for me, and I try to do that for others to encourage them.
That's right.
I grew up watching Tex Antoine.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who was
I remember that name.
I remember that name.
Wow. I shouldn't have brought it up. Tex Antoine was thrown off the air for a couple of comments that he wound up making. He was the weatherman, the local weatherman in New York, and I think he liked to imbibe.
Oh, that was kind of classic. I mean, honestly.
He was off in one day. Well, wow. He did something and said something and he was gone.
I actually got called in one time because the previous weatherman in Richmond was so intoxicated that they could not find him. There was a bar across the street from the station. Not even across, it was really across the driveway. And he would go there and they would say, it's 11 o'clock, he's not back. And they're like, he'll be here. He's like on in 10 minutes.
Right.
He had fallen asleep in another studio. And the studio lights were off and he was literally on the floor, like in a corner, nobody saw him. And so they had a 4-minute hole in the weather and he was done. And so they bring me in to fill in. They're like, we hate her. Where's the other guy? Oh. And I'm like, guys, I hate me. I mean, I don't even want to be here. You know, but they didn't know what had happened.
Right,
and another
right.
time, he had pretended to have a heart attack on the air. And
what?
He was really just drunk. And they brought... This is all true. I mean, they brought an ambulance crew in. They're like, he started hyperventilating. He fell to the floor. And the crew comes in. They start to work on him. And they're like, we're done. Because they could smell the booze.
It sounds like Tootsie meets Network.
Well, here's the amazing thing. I mean, there was a period of time in broadcasting where this kind of thing was pretty common. There was drinking. I know in Washington, and there are many stories about, like, the whole Channel 9 crew used to go to the dancing
right.
crap. You have a 6 o'clock show, and then for most stations, they have an 11 o'clock show. Fox, of course, has a 10 o'clock show. There's a big gap there.
Oh, yeah.
And people would go out and drink their dinner.
Yep.
And you even at Channel 5, you told a story once about how you could buy beers from one of the
Unbelievable.
Editors.
It's so true. And when I first started there, one of the editors had a refrigerator, like one of those mini fridges, mm-hmm. but it was like an apartment-sized fridge. And we had a production assistant whose job every day was to go to Rodman's and get a case of beer. This guy had a can on his fridge. It was the honor system. And you were to put in 50 cents and buy a beer. And people had beers in their edit suite. They had beers near the anchor desk, not on the anchor
right,
desk. They
right.
had cigarettes up there. My cameraman would have a beer. And they were always grouchy, you know. And he'd watch football when uh-huh. I was trying to see
oh,
the maps.
Oh, my God, to see the maps, yeah.
So they'd have, like, Monday Night Football. And I'm like, I can't see anything. Because I have to watch television
right,
to see the maps.
Right.
And they just didn't care. I was, you know... It was amazing.
It was a whole different day.
Ernie Bauer tells a story of needing to edit something in a big hurry and coming up to one of the editors and says, you got to cut this for me fast. He goes, well, I'll do it, but I'm drunk. True story. So then after a few years, in the early 90s, we got in a new news director and an assistant news director. And she called a meeting and said, I understand there's been some drinking here and that's going to stop. Mm. And everybody was like, offended.
What?
And she's like, seriously, you guys can't do that. You cannot drink on the job. And that put an end to it.
Wow.
But it was like everybody was like really, they had their feathers ruffled over it.
Who do you think you are,
right,
anyway?
They're probably having union meetings. Does she have the authority
right.
to tell us that we can't drink
right,
on the job?
Exactly, yeah.
That's funny. Well, those days are long gone.
Oh, my gosh,
yes.
are they ever.
It's a whole yes. different thing now. And
you can only drink on a podcast.
Right. We could do that if we wanted to. Listen, I know that you have to go, but I wanted to. I did want to get you on to talk about you know, these great stories and over the years, some of the things that you've seen and all that kind of stuff. And just to say, congratulations, because doing this for as long as you've done it, you've been at Channel 5 for what, 20?
29 years in
29
September.
Years.
And
wow.
I've had at least 12 news directors. And
wow.
the part that shocks me is that I'm still there. Because
can't you hold down a job?
I know, seriously, right?
It's the news director. Sue's done it. It's the news director.
But, you know, to try to be there to make sure I'm the person that each news director wants,
yeah.
I think that's the accomplishment is that I've lasted. But that's in thanks to the viewers who have been loyal. They've,
yeah.
they've watched. They've stuck by me. And Fox has usually gotten pretty good ratings.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we've been very fortunate with that. But, boy, I love living in Washington. And I'm
yeah.
really grateful that I got to raise my girls here. What a great city this is. I
yes,
love this
is.
City. I love the diversity, the ethnicity,
mm-hmm.
the partisanship. It's all wonderful. It's
yeah.
just the best place
That's
to live.
That's why I came back. I love this town.
It's
really,
a great town.
Yeah, it's a great place to do this for a living.
Yes.
It really is. And when the viewers embrace you as they have you, it's you can do this. You can do it forever.
Yeah, and you can tell who's going to make it and who isn't. There is a type that works in Washington.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And part of it is you really do have to know your stuff. You have to. I went back and got certified so
right.
that I would understand forecasting. And the local folks here at the National Weather Service, as well as the National Meteorological Center, when I went in and said, I want to know everything you know.
Yep.
They put me through all their modules.
Yes.
They let me come to briefings. They have helped me out through the years. And and I'm really grateful for them. But it started with me saying, I need to learn more.
Yep.
And I would like to be taught. And well, they did.
We're glad you did.
Oh, thank you.
And we thank you for gracing us with your presence. It's the holiday season. I know you're very busy.
Oh, my pleasure.
I know you're... get off eBay, Joe.
Yeah. Oh, my God, another coat. Rob, you're going to look so good.
I got this.
Sue, how should I dress for tomorrow?
These spats.
Gary wants to know how he should dress for tomorrow. I think you got to have one of Joe's bowlers or top hats.
Okay.
One of his 1920s cravats.
I want to carry like a Bat Masterson cane.
Oh, he's got walking sticks. I'm like, the girls always indulge Joe. I'm like, please, he's dressing like this in the neighborhood. I tell Joe, I'll go for a walk with you, but it has to be dark.
That's great. Like,
I think there's a future podcast, the Joe and Gary Show. Talking about old clothing. Thank you, Sue Palka. We love
you. I love working with you, Tony. Thanks for coming to the Night Side.
Oh, my pleasure.
And we love seeing Gary around the station, too.
Yeah, isn't it nice?
I hope Off the Cuff takes off.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank
we
you.
Hope so, too. We
thank
hope
you
so,
so
too.
Much.
All right. Sue Palka, everybody.
All
thank
right.
you, Sue.
All right.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
The Tony Perkins Show, featuring Gary Stein.
Bam, ba-dam. All righty.
She was great.
Isn't she wonderful?
She really is.
Both she and Joe are just fantastic people.
It's too bad she has no energy.
One of the best in the business, I'm
oh,
telling
man.
You. So we want to continue with the holiday theme.
Yes.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about holiday cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned this to you maybe just driving somewhere.
Yeah.
That there's some holiday cards in general I want to talk about, okay. But specifically... Do you get a card from anybody that includes, and Rob, you too,
okay,
that includes a newsletter that cleverly tells you about all of the exploits their family mm-hmm. went through during the year? Because I get one from a cousin, and then I get another one.
Yeah, I think I get two a year. Neither of them from family members. They're from acquaintances, really.
Oh, man.
I mean, there's so much acquaintances that I don't know most of the people they're referring to in the lengthy newsletter.
Well, unfortunately, I know everybody that they're talking about in this one, but it's called, I can't say the family name, but it's the Something Gazette,
mm-hmm.
and they Photoshop this letter like it's a newspaper cover. It's so clever. And then the details that, you know what, we can all get caught up in thinking that what is specific to our family that we're loving is going to be fun for everybody.
Right.
I don't really think I need that kind of editor. I know when I'm talking about something that really nobody else gives a crap about.
Right.
So this particular cousin writes, well, we sure had a fun trip to the Bahamas this year. And they tell you what they did and all that. And then, well, little Judy once again got straight A's. And it was at a great time because she got into Harvard.
Yeah.
And before she goes to Harvard, she'll be working this summer, interning somewhere. Or she's joined the Peace Corps, mm-hmm. and for the summer she'll be helping other people in a third world country or whatever. And, you know, Dad bought a new car this year. He finally decided that it was time to do something for himself. And I'm thinking, I don't give a blank. I can't even get through it.
Yeah,
I can't get through it.
I don't think I've ever gotten through any of them.
People who think that their lives are that interesting, there's just something wrong there.
You know,
I mean,
one of the ones that I get is from a very sweet couple. I really do. It's very nice, but I guess it's what they send out. They don't send out anything else, a regular Christmas card. So I guess they send that to everybody because, again, I don't know the rest of their family or anything like that. I just know the couple. So I can't get through it. I don't, you know.
No.
I can't relate to any.
I think the only way I would be able to accept one is if it was from a very old person who wanted to do it, and you know, just to be sweet, I would read it and write back about it. Like if they wrote, you know, well, this year I'm incontinent, you know, things are really changing. That, but you know, if it's not funny,
here's what doesn't help. Usually, number one, and tell me if this is the case with the one that you get. How about spacing it a little differently? Because typically, it's the lines are very close together. The page is heavy with wordage, and
yes,
you know, it's not easy to read.
Right.
Number one. Number two, they're not usually written in an exciting way.
Right.
You know, it's usually kind of boring, and you know, maybe if they wrote it like a tabloid, you know, with headlines for the different and jazzed it up a little bit, that might be
well, but these things come off like Rick Moranis in Parenthood, where you're supposed to be really excited about, you know, every thing.
The ones you get are really detailed.
They all have to do with digestion. So, but it's amazing what people don't recognize.
Yeah.
We can all be blinded, but this is like serious.
Now,
this
Rob, do you know what we're talking about here?
I do know exactly what you're talking about. I have family members, family friends that do this exact same thing. And, you know, I'll occasionally read the first couple paragraphs or whatever, if I happen to even see it to begin with.
Yeah. You know what I would love to do?
What's that?
Send one out. Since we all pretty much just said, I can't even get through it. Send one out and then just late in it, just write, I know you're not even reading this. You know, you're a piece of garbage or whatever.
You know where I thought you were going to go? I thought you were going to say this. For those people who send us one, let's write one and the details are even more minuscule. This morning I had Cheerios.
That's right.
My wife, who usually does, chose not to, and just like kill that, them right. with like.
Or you could write one, and towards the end of it, in the middle, you know, somewhere, you just write. And I know you're probably not even really reading this, but the first one to call me who gets to this part, I will give you $100 or something like that. Just to see, and it would be funny if you didn't get any calls during the holidays.
No, what would not be so funny is if people really read the whole thing. And you're giving out hundreds left and right.
No, I would to the first person.
Oh, just the
first. I would do that as a test. I would do that. You know what? If any of you do these letters, first of all, we apologize for...
it's a little late, too.
Yeah, but that's what you do. If you think people aren't reading them, at the end say, tell you what, first one to call me says, I read this whole thing, I'm going to give you $100.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like
it
a lot.
It can't be separated from the rest of the letter. It's got to be in there, like in the second to last paragraph.
I have another cousin who I don't think listens to podcasts. I really hope he doesn't. He's discussed. They've retired and they've moved away.
Sure.
And it's like he's living like in Walden's park or something. Yeah. Not
Walden's
really.
Pond, I think.
Not really.
Right.
But in his head.
Right.
He is. They've moved someplace and it's beautiful. And he's decided that he's discovered the writer in himself.
Mm.
So every month, everybody gets an email of his writings, of what he's noticed about his surroundings. And
you know a lot of people who are just full of themselves.
Or nuts. Yeah. And I try, and he's really trying to be, I guess, a writer and express himself, and I just can't get through it. And so I actually don't really get it,
mm-hmm.
but I have an evil aunt. My Aunt Lorraine, who I adore,
she sends
it to me. She says, why should we be the only ones? So
I like that. Yeah, I like that. I mentioned earlier, we've got an off the cuff coming up this Thursday on Christmas.
Yes.
And we're going to talk a little bit about this on that show.
Yeah.
So tune in for that. Yeah. Another thing that we're going to mention briefly, the Christmas music, because now we're really in the thick of it. I mean, every radio station. Do you like... Well, you celebrate both Hanukkah
yes.
and Christmas. Do you like Christmas music or holiday music?
Oh yeah, I really do like Christmas music, and there is no Hanukkah music because
right.
you know it's amazing that Jews in many ways created the Great American Songbook.
Yes, that is true.
So you would think that they would create some songs for us that are actually catchy.
That is very odd.
We have the worst songs in our religion you could possibly have,
and we only
have four.
Right.
We only have four, and the great songwriters, Irving Berlin. Why didn't they help us out?
Didn't Irving Berlin write White Christmas?
Yeah, yes, he did. Yes, he did. But he didn't write...
He was very smart. Yeah. He knew where the sales were going to be.
He knew where the royalties were going to come from.
That's right.
But it's... Yes, I do love Christmas music, and we have favorite Christmas albums.
Yeah.
And what I do is I probably buy a new Christmas album every year. So
I would do about the same
thing. We have like 30.
Yes, me too. I actually like my collection of Christmas music. It's mostly CDs for me. I load it into the CD changer and play it throughout the house at
right.
the holidays. And I like a lot of the old stuff, and I like some of the new stuff as well. However, there's some music out there that, you know, this could be almost a What Were They Thinking segment.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, we played for you a track from, you know where I'm going, the Bob Dylan Christmas album.
Yes.
Which even saying it sounds funny, but it's a real Christmas album. Just to remind you, because I think this is one of the, and I admire.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it's bizarre. I admire Dylan. I respect his work and all that kind of stuff. This is just crazy. Bob Dylan singing Here Comes Santa Claus.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Fixing and blixing and old as reindeer, pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stocking, see you first, cause Santa Claus comes to
How much battery acid did he drink before recording that?
Well, you know, I actually, because his voice has changed over the years, and it's really bad now. It's shot. I actually wonder, shouldn't you go to an ENT and get that checked out?
Sure, but also, what radio executive said,
no one's gonna
this has to come out, we have to make this.
No one. I don't know why
he made this. Was it just Bob Dylan who probably paid for it?
And the mixing on that track, he's talking about coming down Santa Claus Lane, but he's singing over there on Snow Globe Court.
You're absolutely right. And here's the weird thing. The production is old school production.
Yes.
Like it could be Harry Connick Jr. singing this, you know, because you got the choir in there and the dun 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 all that. But I would understand it better if it was like Dylan on electric guitar or playing an acoustic guitar like he used to do. And
right.
If it was a real Dylan
album.
Yeah. But it's him doing what everyone else has done.
Yeah. Why don't we try to get him on our show to talk about this.
Well, Rob, can you reach out to Bob Dylan's
people? I'll get right on this. Oh, wait, he's calling me back right now.
Oh, no, that's his lawyer. So that's got to be, well, the reason you had to play that is because that really does lead the list of the worst albums out there.
Yeah.
There's one that I couldn't find. It's so bad that I think it's out of production. All I could find was the album cover, Roseanne Barr's Christmas album.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, just remember what she did
to the
national anthem.
Yeah.
And just times 10 for Christmas.
Oh, no.
I think you'd stop celebrating the holidays.
I never knew that there was one. And you can't find it?
I couldn't find it anywhere.
Wow. I couldn't find it either.
Really?
Even the deep, dark corners of the internet, it's not there.
Yeah.
You know, I challenge our listeners. Someone's going to post the picture or something and say that they've had it.
Well, you know what? Do me a favor, listeners. Would you please post a track?
Yeah.
So that other people can share in my discomfort.
I would love to hear this. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't, but I want to hear
sure.
it.
Sure, you know? Sure. In the most bizarre of ways, you want to hear it.
And was that the name of it, the Roseanne Barr Christmas album?
I have no idea. The Roseanne Barr. There's only one.
Yeah. Is it a requirement when you're a celebrity that at some point you have to release a Christmas album?
I think so.
Everybody does.
Even the Jews, they do it anyway.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Barbara Streisand.
Yep.
She's put out a couple of Christmas albums.
She had a great one. Yeah,
true. She has a real good
one.
Yeah. All right. Strange.
Yeah.
Speaking of Christmas music, I think I'm going to surprise you here.
Okay.
I love Christmas music. I love many of the contemporary Christmas songs.
Oh, are you going to go classic on me?
No, I'm going to go 1970s. 1970s. One of my least favorite Christmas songs. It's actually by Paul McCartney.
Oh, I'm so glad that not everything is incredible.
Not
by
everything
him.
Is. I really don't like. And it has become a quote unquote during the rock and roll era a holiday classic because it's played on the radio all the time. But I am not a fan of Wonderful Christmas Time.
The mood is right. The spirit's up. We're here tonight. And that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
It's too cutesy pie.
Well, I hear this on the radio every year.
Yeah.
This version.
Yeah.
And I forgot that it was him.
Yeah.
But also, the song itself is too cutesy pie.
Yes, it is.
It's one of my least favorite Christmas songs. But why is he so overdubbed. The production of it for me is not that good.
I don't like the production. I don't even know what the instrument is or the sound effects at the beginning. That doing, 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 you know.
But the cool thing is those instruments, it doesn't date it at all. I mean, you don't even know when it was produced.
No.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, it's timeless.
It could have come out yesterday, yeah, and you would never know.
Because you don't know what he's using. It's great.
Oh, my God. It's so 1970s. So I believe it or not, there are some things Beatles related that I'm not that crazy about.
I'm really glad you said that, because people may get the wrong idea, like myself, that everything the Beatles do,
not a fan of that.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. It's refreshing.
Yes, thank you.
I have the Roseanne Barr for me. That's it. But I can certainly pick others. There's one that a particular couple, they're not a couple in life, but they made movies together,
okay,
that they put out a couple of years ago, and I think it's dreadful. I think it's there shouldn't be a Christmas if this album is going to be played.
Okay.
John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John put out a Christmas album, and the cover alone shows how unctuous it is. They are like smiling, and yet I can't tell if they really want to be together. Maybe they weren't even in the same room, and the album cover was shot.
I think it came out like last year or something.
Or the year before.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a song called This Christmas.
Yeah.
Why don't we hear a little bit of that just to offend people?
Are they there yet? Are they in the room?
they're not here, no.
Hang all the mistletoe, I'm gonna so get earnest to know you better. How much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas,
fireside is blazing bright, and we're caroling through the night. And this Christmas will be.
I love the song. I don't like this.
You know what? I think that even if you're a huge Travolta fan, even Scientologists wouldn't like this song.
You know, the problem with that song, it came out 30 years too late. They should have done this in 1980 when they were both hot.
Exactly. During Grease or something.
They were the Grease mm-hmm. couple. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's too late.
Well, then you can get away with doing a really crappy album. Now.
Well, it would be, you'd accept it a little bit
you
more.
You would. You
now
would.
It's just, it's crappy and it's not on time.
Well, back then it would have felt more organic. This just feels like, why?
It's like, hey, we did something together once. Let's try this.
Yeah. I'm over sleigh bells. Every Christmas track, they just put sleigh bells in there. It's the automatic stamp. This is a Christmas song.
Right.
Yeah.
When I was playing, you know, studying percussion in college, you know, I didn't actually play. I just studied it in college. We established that earlier. I would always get stuck with the sleigh bell part. So I play a great sleigh bell because nobody knows how to hold it.
That's your instrument.
I'm over sleigh bells.
I'm the whole thing to me. Now, we will, this album did get attention because when it did come out, the cover of the CD, the whole thing looks like, you know, do you remember when albums would come out, they wouldn't sell, they would cut off a corner of it and put it in the cutout bin?
Oh, sure.
Album came out looking like a cutout bin album. It looks like it's a cheesy photo.
So they already knew.
Yeah.
Pre-cut.
Yeah, we'll put it on the website so you see the picture. Frankly, she doesn't really look like herself anymore.
No.
Olivia's had some work done. And well, John's probably had some work done.
He changed a lot over the years, too. At this point, with all these celebrities, you can't tell what they really would look
like.
That is true.
You're absolutely right. All right, so that's our look at Christmas songs. Do you have another one?
I have one more.
Oh, you do?
We don't have to do it.
No, do it. Please do it.
Well, just one more, because this was a big thing in television for a while.
I wish the viewers could have seen your face.
Really?
It's a very cute face.
Did I look disappointed?
Well, you look like, oh, I'm not going to do my other one.
Oh, sometimes I'm a child.
It was a cute child. Face.
Okay. It's like, oh, I'm done now? Okay. I'll be good. This was a trend. Every television show at one point that had any kind of a musical theme to it would often put out a Christmas album.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't think this was called a very Brady Christmas, but is the Brady Bunch Christmas album.
Oh, of course, I had
and,
to.
And yeah, and I don't know who bought this. I don't know.
Probably teeny boppers, you know, some kids.
Right. I mean, any fan of the show would probably get fooled into buying it because they think it's going to be good music. And they probably actually liked it because they were fans of the show.
Partridge Family actually put out a fairly well-respected Christmas album.
They did. And one of the reasons why I didn't include it is because I like David so much. Right. I just didn't want to go there, you know. But I think that everybody should be treated to a little bit of Frosty the Snowman by the Brady Bunch.
Frosty the Snowman was a jolly, happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal. Frosty the Snowman is a fairy tale, they say. He was made of snow, but the children know how he came to life today. There must have been some magic in that old silk cap they found, for when they placed it on his head, he began to dance around.
Some of it is so high, it almost sounds like the Chipmunks.
Yeah, it's actually kind of cute to me. I guess that's Cindy, the little girl.
Yeah, well, we always think that if a cute little kid is singing, we're going to like it more.
Right, so right. I don't know. Are those the other Bradys behind her? It almost just sounds like a stock group of singers.
It really does. It sounds like studio singers.
Yeah. I don't think it's the whole Bradys. I mean, maybe, you know what? It's probably individual Bradys on different tracks and then some professional
singers. We can't ask Robert Reed because he's dead.
Oh, wow. Merry Christmas to you, too. There are plenty of others who are alive.
Yeah, Florence. We could ask Florence.
Florence is very much alive.
Yeah, Barry Williams.
Alice is dead, though.
She recently.
Yeah, I think the last couple of years.
It was very sad.
But all the... Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
I like that.
Just
Alice.
Because we're saying Alice is dead, but it's Ambie Davis who died.
Ambie Davis.
The character is still out there.
Yeah, right. Alice lives on.
Yeah.
And is gone.
Right.
All the kids are still alive.
Yes, they are.
But they're all.
As far as we know.
Yeah. Boy, you took it in a very different direction.
I did. I got dark. I didn't mean to.
So there you have our favorite Christmas songs of all time featuring the Brady Bunch.
You mean the worst.
Yeah, the worst. Yeah. All right, we're almost out of time, but you wanted... Oh, there's the face again.
I thought, you know,
no.
Maybe I'm not here today.
No. You're very much here, and I do want to hear this story you're going
to tell. Well, this is unrelated to Christmas, but it is related to last week's show. We had Louis Anderson on.
Yes.
And you know how I sometimes do awkward and embarrassing, horrendous, horrible, terrible moments
run-ins
with stars?
Yes, yeah.
I think it's going to be refreshing that I actually have an upbeat story about something that relates to what Louis talked about.
Well, this is going to be nice. And it's a nice way to finish the holiday.
And
episode.
I think you're going to like it.
Okay.
I really do.
All right.
I have a very close friend who was a stand-up comic. We played a lot of racquetball together living in L.A. His name was Glenn Super, and Glenn was known as Mr. Bullhorn.
Oh, I know who this is.
His whole gimmick was, his whole routine was with the bullhorn, and he would just take the bullhorn and yell, "Fat lady in the frozen food section, move on, move on, head over to the health food." You know, and that's what he built his career on.
Right.
He got a big break opening for George Carlin at Caesar's Palace in Vegas. Now, we were living in L.A. He tells me on the racquet court one day that he's going to be doing this. And I said, well, is your name going to be up on the billboard?
Mm-hmm.
He said, yes.
Wow.
I said, you know, I had been doing a lot of photography and doing actors' headshots to maintain my own acting career because I was starving, you know, and came up with a lot of bad stories from those days. But I said, you know what? I got nothing to do this weekend. I'll go with you. So we drove to Vegas together. And I took shots of his billboard.
Oh, very cool.
And then we went backstage, and he introduced me to George Carlin and George's wife. And I got to watch the entire show from backstage.
Very cool.
So Glenn goes out. I'm sitting with George. He likes Glenn a lot, and he thinks Glenn's doing a great job. No competition between them.
Mm-hmm.
And Glenn comes off, and George goes, "Ah, oh, that was really great." I sat and talked with George, who was just a regular guy.
Wow.
But the impressive moment of this, the reason for this story, is George goes out, and he does his act, and he kills because he's George Carlin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is probably, I need to date this for you, this is probably like around 83, 84. Carlin was
so
still with the ponytail.
Yep.
He's at his prime.
Yep.
He's the king,
yep.
You know? And he's out there and he's doing his thing and we're all laughing and Glenn is saying he's killing. I'm saying it. His wife is saying it. He comes off stage, somebody hands him a towel. He wipes his forehead. He comes running into the dressing room. He is so excited. He jumps on the sofa and he says to his wife, "Oh my God, did you see? I finally got the timing down on that joke, and it finally worked." They laughed at it. They laughed. Today was my last, it turned to me. Today was my last day to try that joke because I've tried it enough, and eventually if a joke doesn't work, you throw it out. Mm-hmm. But I got it. You see what happened? I put that word in front of the other, and then I moved this word over here. I'm telling you that this guy who was established for all those years was so excited that he mastered a joke and it mattered that much. And that's why George Carlin was brilliant.
Absolutely right. That is a great story. And it speaks to the true comedians. You know, words, that's their craft.
Right.
That's their craft. And
the order.
Yep. The order, you know, how fast or slow you tell the joke, where it is in your act.
What came before it? What comes after it?
It's not important.
It's
not arbitrary.
No. No. It's really crafted.
That's
and
great.
And here's a guy who cared that much.
Yep.
That one joke.
Yep.
He finally got it. He nailed it.
Because that joke was on the way out.
Yeah.
He got to keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great.
I was so impressed.
I just read an interview in the current issue of Rolling Stone magazine with Chris Rock, and he talks about the guy. You know, Chris was on Saturday Night Live not that long ago, and his opening monologue, it was great because they let Chris be Chris instead of coming out. You know, some of the hosts mm-hmm. come out and they do these bits with the other characters or the actors come out and do stuff. Chris just did stand-up. And it was like a 12-minute set, which you don't see that often from Chris Rock. He does it. It was controversial because he talked a little bit about the Freedom Tower in New York and how he's never going in that building. And he's like, "Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?" He said, "You better put some stuff in there that people need to go to, like a DMV or family court, because otherwise no one's going in. You put a sunglass hut in there, nobody's going in." It was great.
That's great.
But controversial, because he talked about that, talked a little bit about the Boston Marathon, and the interviewer said, "Did you worry that you were being a little too edgy?" Some people talked about it, said, you know, it was a little rough there. And he said, "You know what? I'm not trying to be edgy. I'm just trying to be funny."
Right.
"And I do, you know, what other comics do. I go to clubs. I try out material. And if the joke's funny, it stays in. If it's not funny, it goes out. That was just funny."
Right.
You know,
right.
And he said, "The worst kind of comic is a comic who says, oh, I'm edgy. I'm not trying to be edgy. I'm trying to be funny."
Right, right.
You know, but
that's
it's
my job.
So happens, right. His sensibility, of course, comes out in his act. But it's all about the craft. It's all about the craft. And that's one of the things I love about stand-up comedy and loved about doing it, perfecting that joke. And
that's
it would
right.
take, it's like a piece of music where someone's writing and they're trying to figure out, does the middle eight go here and do I end it this way? That's what a joke
but
is.
But if you're good at this job, if you're at the beginning of your career or near the end of it, mm-hmm. the mission is the same.
That's right.
The mission is about perfecting
that's
the
right.
joke.
That's right.
That's what
I
love.
Hearing that. That's great. Very, very good. All right. Rob Ford, I think that's it for us today.
Yeah. Great show.
For those of you who have celebrated Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, we hope you had a wonderful holiday. Christmas is coming up this week. Hope you have a very Merry Christmas and enjoy this whole time of year. We have got a very special episode coming up next week.
Yes.
It is our end of year episode. We're going to do something very different than we haven't done
very
before.
Very different. And as Tony likes to say, weekly, it's chock full.
Yeah.
This is chock full.
Yeah, we think you're going to like it. Check out our episode of Off the Cuff on Fox 5 on Christmas Day at 5 p.m. and 11 p.m. It will rerun on New Year's Day as well.
We're
Gary.
Doing television.
Yes, we are. Check it out. It's been a pleasure, sir.
My pleasure.
Rob Ford, thank you very much.
Pleasure, likewise.
Thanks for listening. We will see you in a week.
Take care.
The Tony Perkins Show, a Moore Broadcasting presentation. This is Dude Walker speaking. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.